good day to you from episode 2 of our new podcast series, Project Breakaway, a metaphorical and literal time in the day when we here at Predator Cycling take some time away from working in the back of the shop to come and share with our listeners what we're doing, how we're doing it, what it takes to do it, our ideas, our innovative success stories, and even our missteps and failures. If you find yourself with an interest in bicycles, composite manufacturing, out-of-the-box design, or even curiosities beyond, I encourage you to stick with us, settle in, and learn a little. I'm Courtney B., co-owner and project manager of Predator Cycling, and I'm here with my partner, Aram Goganian, the other co-owner, CEO, lead designer, and engineer, and I'll skip all the other accolades I gave you last week in episode 1.
No, I like that. You can do it again.
No. Never. Just kidding. Maybe. Anyway, how's it going over there?
It's going pretty well.
Good. So, Aram, I think in this episode, we really want to focus on one component section, a piece of the new RF20 road frame that we mentioned last episode. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the drive side dropout. Firstly, Explain the drive side for us non-cyclists.
Yeah. So we say drive side that if you're sitting on the bike, that's the right side of the bike where the chain ring, the front derailleur, rear derailleur, chain, cassettes and everything goes.
So like the brain of the bicycle is on the right side.
The drive unit, the what converts your power, your pedal power to forward movement is the drive side.
That's my pedal power.
Your pedal power is unmatchable.
Okay, so then let's explain what is the dropout and what is its function.
So the dropout is what the rear wheel is held in place by. So it connects the chainstay, which is that tube that goes from the bottom bracket area where your pedals are, that's like kind of parallel to the ground, to the back of the bike. That's the chainstay. And the seat stay is what goes from the dropout and goes up to your seat. So that kind of goes 45-degree angle going up to the seat. Mm-hmm. And those, the chainstay and the seat stay are connected at the dropout.
Now, I don't know if you remember, we used to have a picture of a bicycle, mm-hmm. a frame, and then each tube was actually the name of the tube.
Uh-huh.
That's how I learned what a bicycle was and what each piece was before I started working here.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we had to actually do that too for customers because a lot of customers didn't know what tubes were when we did like repairs or prototyping or custom work.
So I think I'm going to try and throw that picture up just so people have a better understanding of what tube and each little doohickey on a bicycle is.
For sure. It's helpful.
Anyway, go ahead.
So one of the things that we spent a lot of time designing the dropout, because it's a complicated part because you have a lot of loads and forces. It's holding the rear wheel in place. It's holding the rear derailleur, which does the rear shifting. It's also where all the force from your pedaling is going into that dropout to turn that wheel. So there's a lot of leverage and forces and stuff that's happening. And it's in a tight spot. So there's a lot of limitations on what you can do. So it's just a super complicated part.
Right. So let's explain or discuss the historical materials that dropouts have usually been made out of, specifically in the composite industry. So
in the composite world, in the last 5 or 6 years, there's only really been one way that most people make the dropout. And that's called a compression molded process. There's a bulk mold, there's an SMC system. There's different styles, but the basic understanding is it's a compression mold. So, for everyone that doesn't know what compression molding is, in composites, what we typically do is we take short strands of carbon fiber, anywhere from 20 mil to 40 mil in length, and we have prepreg, so it's already impregnated with epoxies, and we get that in a matte material, and then we cut that up and pack it into a mold. That's the net shape of the part, very close to the net shape. It's kind of overbuilt a little bit in the key areas. And then we put it in about a 10 to 20 ton press, trying to get about anywhere from 200 to about 400 PSI mold pressure and compress that into a part. And that's typically how it's done.
Okay.
So
let's discuss the RF20's original dropout design and its evolution and how we've optimized it.
Yeah, so like that's typically how the dropouts are made. And then so one of the things you have to do with that is once you get it out, you have to machine the holes for where the axles go, where everything mounts, your internal geometries for your tube connections that have to be all machined. So when we first designed the RF20, that was our intent. We were going to do it basically how everybody else did. And then we kind of went down that hole of like analyzing everything. We realized it's really not the best way to do it. There's a lot of extra material. And anytime you talk, I mean, this is probably going down a rabbit hole here, but anytime you talk about compression molding, it's designed to be machined. That was why they designed it. Originally, it was Callaway and Ferrari that did the original, or Lamborghini. I think it was Lamborghini that originally did the first compression molded parts for consumer stuff. And the whole concept was you could machine it. But once you cut it, you're talking about little hairs that are all connected to each other with epoxy systems that are compressorized. Mm-hmm. So as soon as you start cutting that away, you actually cut the fibers.
You're
so
fraying it.
You're fraying that carbon.
Into a weaker part.
So, yes, exactly. And that matrix that holds it all together, all the matrix and that those fibers that support each other are randomly sorted in different ways, which gives it the ability to recover from that kind of cutting. So it's meant to be done like that, but you still weaken the part.
Right.
So we decided to work on so one of the projects that we've been working on here is net molding. And net molding is basically the concept that you get the finished part out of the mold. Like if you ever watch those How It's Made videos of like injection molding where you see...
No, absolutely not.
Well, it's fun. You should look at it. It's really interesting. Injection molding, you basically like shoot plastic into a mold and then like essentially a finished part pops out. That's where we're taking it with our system for the RF20. So our dropout is made using a net molding system. So we don't have...
So there's no material excess. There's
right.
Possibly no weakening of frayed carbon fibers.
Right. So, yes, exactly. 100%. So there's no cutting. There is on the dry side dropout, there is no cutting. On a couple other components, there's very light trimming of a part because of flashing that we have to trim it. But on the drive side dropout, there is no machining done. So all of the strength and integrity of the fibers are completely kept. We also use up about 60% less material. So our material waste is less, mm-hmm. Which, because like I said, is kind of went down a rabbit hole. We also look at how much energy it takes to heat up the molds. So we could actually reduce how much energy we put into electricity we use to heat our molds.
I am all about putting less energy into things.
No, yes. Well, I mean, it costs money. I mean, it's money that's spent.
And I am all about saving money here.
For sure.
So let's discuss our dropout. Our shape is hollow inside. Our design is different.
Mm-hmm. So the drive side dropout on the RF20 is fully hollow. It's also, we designed into it a cable management system so that you can run your derailleur cable for either if it's mechanical or electronic. There's a formed guide that goes through the back of the dropout and comes out the back.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Is that something new to the industry, or is that something...
It's been done. People have done similar systems where they have hollow top halves of the dropouts. People have tried to do it, and a couple companies have done a pretty good job of setting it up. One of the things that's different about this one is that it's the actual entire cavity of the guide is molded in the part. So there's no post like metal insert that goes in to kind of guide the cable in. There's no after the fact, like glued in like a plastic insert or anything that guides it. It's actually molded into the frame, into the dropout.
You're telling me from the person who sits there and lays it up.
You are the person that does it.
Yeah. What else is fun and fancy about this dropout?
The other thing that's really cool about this dropout is that it is both a mixture of, composite like SMC material, which is basically a chop material, prepreg chop material, but it's also directional fibers. So we actually are not just packing it with carbon, small strand carbon, and compression molding it. We're actually optimizing the fiber orientation for the loads and forces on the dropout. So this kind of gets really interesting because I think you've seen like over the last couple of years, like titanium 3D printing has become real popular in bikes. And you can, the cool thing about it is about using basically an SLS system. I would use a laser to melt.
What's SLS?
It's a type of printing that uses, it's a powder based printing system where you have a powder and a laser that hits it and melts the titanium or aluminums or different types of powders. You can also use it with plastics.
And they're printing titanium out of powder?
Yeah, the powder itself is titanium. And then with the laser basically welds it essentially together. And it does it in layers. And it's very cool. And the cool thing about it is you can actually very accurately put material exactly where you need it. And something in composites and compression molding, you could never do. So we're kind of like splitting that area where you can actually put enough material where exactly where you need it in the direction you need it, in all directions. So X, Y, Z, I mean, a full orientation into the part in the molding process. So it's kind of that... we use a lot of the topology optimization and generative workflows that you use in the 3D printing realm, we use in designing our layup schedules for composites, especially this dropout, because it's very complicated. We actually did a AU class on it, the concept of the generative design.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we did that. That was the first one we did together.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, is there anything else that you'd like to discuss about the 3D print side of the technique and how we manipulate it and maybe possibly creating an easier process, a more efficient process for us?
Yeah, so one of the things that I say the 3D printing revolution that's happened in the last, 10 years. Yeah, 10, 15 years.
It's so crazy. 3D print has been out for so long, and I know absolutely nothing about it. You know what they need? You know, like an Apple store when we were young and you'd go ahead and play with your iPod.
Oh, yeah.
Shuffle or whatever it was.
Yeah.
They need that for 3D print where you go in and you play with all the 3D printers.
Oh, that'd be cool. Well, the 3D print, it's you know, the cool thing about 3D printing is that it's been around for a while, but it's still a very new area. So there's just new tech coming out at just such a rapid rate. It's really cool.
And using 3D print in manufacturing is there, but it's not
as mainstream as it could be.
It's not mainstream. When me as a normal layperson thinks about 3D print, I think of just like playing and making little tiny things in your house and like, we made like a little toy boat for the bathtub the trend of 3D printing yourself.
Oh, right.
And your little statues,
uh-huh.
Which my parents have done.
Yeah, we have it.
But you don't think of it as an additive manufacturing type of force that could actually alleviate many problems.
Right. But yes, you're absolutely right. And 3D printing is getting really powerful in that sense. But the more, well, another interesting aspect of it is how it's affected our tools. So like some of our topology optimization, our T-spline modeling support, a lot of things that we use in 3D design have actually been accelerated because of 3D printing, because we could now make things that we couldn't make before. So that's kind of what's tying back into this process. And that's why I kind of draw a parallel between them and 3D printing, 3D print to manufacturing parts and our methodology we're using for these dropouts is that we're able to optimize fiber orientation in a net-shaped part in full 3D. So like we can manipulate which direction we need for, like where we're having loads come in on the part, we can manipulate in that direction. Okay, I need, you know, additional support here. So we're going to use a unidirectional fiber. We're going to use a plane weave because we have an impact zone. We can really accurately put material exactly where we need it, and then where we don't need it, we don't have to put it there. So that mentality of that net shaping of a part, we use a lot of processes that are used in 3D print.
So the 3D print is not just for the part itself. No. I don't want you to confuse it with like, oh, there's a 3D print inside this part. It's utilized also as like mold making materials.
Yeah, we make a lot of, I mean, we here in the shop, we use a lot of 3D print for tools. We make a lot of tools are made from 3D prints or molds of tools are made in 3D mm-hmm. prints. Yeah, we use a lot of 3D printing.
And Aram's always talking about the material sciences of 3D print. It's not just plastic. They're doing like carbon fiber infused prints and
there's some cool stuff. A bunch of my news feeds in the morning, I'm like, wait, they're doing what with what? Like, it blows my mind what they're doing. So you can use like carbon fiber infused like pack and stuff you can use, which is primarily for aerospace because of just the price points. But you can do that. They're even doing
But
now,
it is available.
Oh, yeah.
Commercially, you can just go on Amazon and buy this.
Uh-huh.
Right. I just want people to think, when you hear aerospace, people are like, oh, that's an industry that's untouchable and no one else can play with these materials.
Oh, no, it's totally available. The only problem you get into some of those materials is you get into like some super high temp stuff. Mm-hmm. And as you get into higher temperatures, you start getting into more complicated because you have you have warping, you also have shrinking factors, and then just the equipment that it takes to get to that temperature and hold a tolerance and for an extended period of time on a 3D printer just gets really hard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's something that we've been playing with. I think we hinted about it in the last podcast, but we've been doing some high temperature printing here.
Right.
And we've been doing quite a bit of 3D. I mean, we've invested a lot of time and money and energy into 3D print. Primarily up until now, it's been entirely made for tools is what we've used it for. But hopefully that may change.
But going forward, I wanted to discuss maybe a future podcast here coming up where we want to discuss design and simulation. But we're also going to be talking about 3D print here coming up.
Yeah.
And our evolution into it. But also, I think coming up sooner than later, we're going to talk about design simulation and CFD, which is computational fluid dynamics. For people like me, that just means a wind tunnel with colorful lines that flow over a bicycle.
Yeah. We do a lot of simulation here. So a big part of our workflow here is simulation and using that as an input really early on in the design phase
mm-hmm.
so that we can get feedback instantaneously on what we should be doing and where we should be going in the direction of the bike.
Right.
And the RF20 spent a obscene amount of time in simulation for both mechanical and for CFD.
Yes. So we're going to delve into that next week, I believe.
Yeah.
So, So let's quick, before we head out, talk about some recent news here at the shop. Let's discuss LinkedIn.
Yeah. So during this whole COVID times, we actually, I did my first LinkedIn course.
LinkedIn Learning.
So,
which was lynda.com for people who don't know. And if people don't know what lynda.com was, it's kind of like online classes you pay for to learn new skills and hobbies.
Yeah. I used to use it all the time because I learned some of my Photoshop Premiere skills and Adobe skills I learned from there.
I learned my Photoshop skills from a book called Photoshop for Dummies. And that's not a lie. I literally had that book. Do you remember those series?
I do. I had one.
I wonder if they still exist. Anyway.
So they approached us after an AU class that we taught and were interested in us teaching a class. We did. We taught a class. Somehow I did the class on designing a bicycle. Go figure. So there's one that's on there right now. Maybe we'll put the link in the blog post section. So there's a class there, and we're in the works right now of doing a really cool class that's talking about the concept of designing a consumer part to be made out of carbon fiber. So we're talking about the workflow from how carbon fiber works and the material properties.
Just a very basic understanding class.
Yeah, an intro into composites, like kind of intro 101 to composites, but geared towards design, and then a just design to all the way through manufacture workflow.
Great.
So it should be fun.
Yeah, and hopefully more future LinkedIn Learning classes.
Yeah, we got another one lined up after that one too already. So it should be fun. It's been nice, and I used a lot of those online learning tools for all kinds of software and plugins and whatnot. So it's kind of nice to...
If there is anything that this guy likes, well, I don't know. It could be a toss-up between conferences, at expos. I mean, luckily this year because of COVID, we haven't had to go to an expo or a conference. And online learning videos.
You learn so many interesting things. There's so many interesting things out there.
Yes, I'm sure there are. I just don't have the brain power. I guess I don't have the brain power to sit down in front of a screen for that long.
No, you do. You could do it.
Oh, well, I guess I do, but to watch mindless TV, not to learn actual things that can help me in life.
No, you enjoy it.
Anyway, okay, let's wrap this up. We thank you for choosing to take some time with us, and we look forward to future breakaways. I will try my hardest to put any mentions in our news section on predatorcycling.com, which I obviously failed at last week in episodes. So hopefully I can get that conference call background screenshot we mentioned last week up too. Also, look for us on Instagram and LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Parler. Just kidding. That last one was just a joke. It was a joke. Let's get to work. Please share, like, and subscribe. Apple Podcasts are up, and I believe Google Podcasts are pending. Anyway, thanks for listening. Have a good one, and find some time to break away.